about seven guys decided to start a football club. And I mean, it's an amazing story of what they achieved, literally from a local team, building up through the county leagues, taking over what was basically floodplain and building their own ground with their own hands, you know, literally brick by brick. You know, some days I sort of pinch myself and say, am I really doing this? Do you know, I felt like that most times in most of my businesses, like, how the hell has this dude got this far and achieved so much? And I am grateful to all the people that helped me along the way.
Simon Leslie, shy door-to-door insurance salesperson to co-founding the largest travel media company in the world.
Why have you bought a football club?
I've come to the end of my...
So welcome to another episode of Screw It, Just Do It. I'd like to welcome back Simon Leslie to the show and share his incredible journey. Look, like me, you were brought up in Cardiff, capital of Wales. Was it football or was it rugby for you growing up?
I don't know. I might alienate a few Welsh people, but I was a Swansea fan.
Were you?
Yeah.
That's even funnier because I was brought up football as well. And my mum, bless her, who's like 82 now, used to take me down to Ninian Park on the terraces.
Yeah.
And looking back in the day, and I remember her, I remember having one memory of her going, oh, look, there must be really cold down there. They've started a fire. And you kind of look back and go, Mum, what planet were you on? But then my father, who's Canadian, I remember him coming over, because they'd divorced, coming over one winter. That winter we had all that snow. I think it was like 81, 82, something like that maybe. And taking me to see Swansea against Liverpool, and him being Canadian, not realising that that was the enemy. And I ended up supporting Liverpool instead of Swansea anyway.
I think I went to that match.
No way.
And there was sort of this warm feeling down my leg. I thought, that's nice, what's that? And I was in the Liverpool end and some guy was weeing down the back of my leg.
Oh, man, that's horrendous.
That was my only one visit to the Vetchfield.
Really, that's my only visit to the Vetchfield as well, funnily enough. So big picture thinking, have you always wanted to own a football club?
I have. It's been this sort of boyhood dream, and I just can't actually believe it's happened. You know, some days I sort of pinch myself and say, am I really doing this? And you know, I felt like that most times in most of my businesses, like, how the hell has this doof got this far and achieved so much? And I am grateful to all the people that helped me along the way.
And why are you doing it? Why have you bought a football club?
I mean, I've come to the end of my, I don't know what the right word is, come to the end of the road with Inc. The pain and the effort to save it during COVID, it really shouldn't have been saved. It should have died on March or April of 2020. Mm. And I didn't do it single-handedly, but, you know, I took a lot of the stress and the direction of where we were going to go on my shoulders. I sort of burnt myself to keep everybody else warm. Mm. And I just said, it's enough now. And I didn't feel... At that point, we were owned by an American group, public company in America, and they were just a little bit... you know, I'd probably save them writing off a massive investment, and I didn't see the appreciation or the gratitude or any of the support that you'd expect. You know, they gave us a very small amount of money, which was, you know, can't, but you know, you don't dismiss, you know. But it didn't, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, that saved the business. We never actually even used it. But, you know, and they said, well, you know, we supported you and saved you. I said, you were not there. You were absent. And, you know, I did a lot on my own shoulders, and I just think I was burnt out. And I hate that word, by the way, those words, because I don't believe them. And I think what happens is when people say they're burnt out is they've lost the passion for whatever it is they do.
Yeah, same.
And that's what I felt. I felt like I've done everything. I've survived every bit of miserable thing that has been thrown at this business from 9/11 to 2008 and even in 2015 when we nearly self-destructed on our own without anyone else's help. And a funny thing happened yesterday, because yesterday was 5 years I got the Business Turnaround Award, and I put this on LinkedIn yesterday, which was for turning around the business after we nearly killed it. And it came up as a reminder yesterday. And yesterday we just lost to Torquay United the night before at 4-1. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I've got a big turnaround to do now to turn this around. And then that turned up as a reminder, and I just think,
you can do it again.
You know, you've done it before.
Yeah.
You did COVID. You know, in comparison, what I'm doing now, whilst it's a little bit challenging, is nothing compared to that. You know, I've got a community of people who are following me and want me to succeed.
Yeah.
I had a lot more at stake, you know, with the businesses.
Mm. And how long did you take out after Inc?
I gave them notice. I gave them about 9 months' notice, and in some ways, that was my, you know, I went around the world saying goodbye to everybody. So it was right. A long goodbye.
I see.
It was like my wife at a party. I just want to go home. I just want to leave.
My wife as well.
and that happened at the end of March. In that time, I was throwing out to the universe, telling anybody who would listen to me, I'd like to buy a football club. What would you like to do next? I said, I don't really know. I've got no idea what I want to do next, but I'd like to buy a football club. And you know, the echoes from the universe started coming back, and I started getting introduced to people and all these different people who sold and bought football clubs. And one guy took me down to Eastbourne, and I'd been to league clubs. So I'd got up as high as League One.
Had you? Okay.
League Two. But what I realised was none of those buggers would change. They were really set right. in their ways.
Mm.
Looked at a few National League teams, but again, they, you know, they were already starting to get close to professionalism.
Mm.
And then when I got to National League South, there were a lot of clubs who were for sale, but most of them were landlocked, you know, sort of in the middle of an estate. So
yeah.
There's nothing you can do to expand them or develop them.
Mm.
And I turn up at Eastbourne and there's this football ground on 11 acres of land, and you're thinking, wow, I can't build Waitrose or houses there, but I can develop it as a sports hub. And
yeah, and that's the plan. You see, like the bigger use is more of a community play than just a professional sports team.
You know, people are obsessed with the football club, but actually what I've always said is I want a rehab centre to have the greatest facilities. You know, even some of the places in London don't have it, and certainly a lot of none of the football clubs will have the facilities that we have. So with all the latest technology to help the players rehab, but also be available to the community so they can use it.
Yeah.
You know, you live in Sandbanks. Eastbourne has got a reputation for sort of being the closest place to heaven. But actually, the average age is 43. It's a young, busting community that's been sort of left behind Brighton and Hastings.
Yeah.
Beautiful place in between the South Downs and the sea. And I don't know, it's like a place that time forgot. And I think there are so many people and businesses looking at it as a destination. And I think, you know, with the football club at the heart of that community and a wellbeing centre, there's an exciting project there.
And did you go at it alone? I've seen you like posting with a Hollywood actor as well. What was the story of there, Simon?
And this whole thing has been about serendipity, you know.
Right.
You'd say you and we meet someone in the reception who again has got a product who can help us.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been my life for the last 6 months. You know, I literally finished with Inc. and I've just been having serendipitous meetings with people.
I love that.
And that's what business is. You know, if anybody tells you that it's all about Excel sheets and business plans and budgets, it's not. It's about who you meet and the connections you make. And I keep meeting cool people. I went to Hollywood as part of my, I think it was part of the Super Bowl.
The farewell tour.
Yeah, and I met my PR agent was also best friends with Gerard Butler. And he said, Gerard's got a screening today, do you want to come? And I went, I love Gerard, he's my favourite actor, of course I'm going to come. And I sat down next to this bloke, English bloke, who was, you know, proper all right. And we got on, we were chatting, and something in the back of my mind said, he's from Eastbourne. So when the project came up and I DM'd him, I said, where are you from? He said, well, my mum and dad live in Eastbourne and I'm just from outside there. And I went, would you like to be involved in a football club? And he went, yeah. And he loves football. I mean,
does he?
Okay. Yeah, you see pictures of him and his dog at LA Galaxy. And,
yeah.
And he plays with Vinnie Jones and all that lot in LA. Ah. And he was a good footballer. I think as a kid he played with Beckham, but...
Right.
And he said, yeah, I love it. And he came along and every time he comes home, he comes to see a game. And
what's his name again?
Oliver Trevino.
That's it. I couldn't remember his surname.
And he's just won an award in Rome. So, his movies he's getting bigger and bigger movies. And,
yeah.
He was in Bruce Willis's last film. He was in the film with Gerard. And him and Gerard are best buddies.
Are they? Love Gerard Butler. Yeah. Yeah.
I've sent a shirt over to Gerard. Hopefully, we'll get Gerard in an Eastbourne Borough shirt soon.
Did you watch the Beckham documentary? I saw that and I was like, I saw him play for LA Galaxy. I saw him play for Real Madrid, and I had the Man United team on the plane with Richard Branson on a flight. And I always remember that the whole team there—they're all being given. The doctor's going around giving them all sleeping pills. And there's Alec Ferguson right at the front in like 1K. And there's Ryan Giggs and Nicky Butt right at the back in like 5A and C. And they're like, can you just bring us coffees every 30 minutes? Just bring them. We won't ask for them. Just bring them and just stick a brandy in each one. Just keep them going. But don't start until the gaffer's got his head down and gone to sleep. So those two just like getting smashed. We're coming back from Tokyo where they've just won the Super Cup and Giggs has just won a car and has got this massive gold key like about, 3 foot long. And in the middle of the night, a Japanese passenger somehow gets through the cabin into upper class and shaking David Beckham awake for an autograph. And you can imagine all hell literally breaks loose at 35,000 feet, and Ferguson just saw the hairdryer in full effect. But it was like horrendous being like a staff on a plane like that. It was like awful, absolutely awful experience.
What a great story.
how big do you dream when it comes to owning a football club? Because I know where your imagination could run to with something like this.
Well, I want it to be this world-class rehab centre with cabins in the woods and, where people will come literally to either get better at sport or get better at business or get better generally.
Yeah.
I'm going to rephrase that. We will have a league team and a women's super league
like
team.
Like that, yeah, okay.
Has it gone to script? Has it, heck? Does it ever? Yeah. I think the script writers are still having a laugh. I mean, how they allowed me to have such a bad November is unbelievable. We topped the injury league.
Oh, really? Right. I was going to say, how bad? Okay.
That's better than Spurs, better than Newcastle.
Yeah.
With 13 injuries.
Wow.
And then on top of that, my manager pulled his hamstring in training. My CEO decided to help someone move a car in the car park and crushed his back. So, I mean, touch wood, nothing else is going to go wrong, but we've had a horrendous November.
Right.
And I'm very glad that it's ending.
Yeah, no, I'm the same, funny enough. No, November hasn't been a good month, but the year as a whole has been. How long does the process take then? So that's the vision, which I love. That's the vision, fantastic. How long, like action-wise, how long... process-wise, did it get from, don't know what I want to do, I want to buy a football club, start meeting lots of people, how long does it then take, paperwork, process-wise, to actually buy a football club?
I only completed in September.
Right, there you go, okay.
So I saw it on March the 2nd, by March, April, May, June the 2nd, I think we exchanged. But we didn't complete until September. But I took over the running of the club on exchange. That's not normal, but...
Okay, yeah.
When your season starts in August and you've got to make decisions...
Yeah, yeah.
They said, look, if we make your decisions, it's going to slow you down a year. So here's the keys to the car. Don't fuck it up, really. Do your best. And probably with hindsight and all the wisdom of all the fans, we rushed too much. We made too many changes. We added too many new players.
Right.
Football is 9/10 recruitment. Mm. So if you recruit one or two wrong players, I did this talk to the Chamber of Commerce last week, and I said, what's the difference between a football club and a business? So there's only two differences. If you have a bad week in business, you can make it up next week.
Yeah.
You can't do that in football. You never get those points back. And second, if you have a really bad employee, you can fire them. Whereas in football, they've got a contract.
Yeah, you've got to pay out.
And they've really got to do something very wrong for them for you not to pay out. Mm. And if they're injured, you can't say, here, another team, would you like my injured player? Because they're not going to take them. So those are the two variables which are very different. Apart from that, it's the same thing. It's people and people.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, everybody said to me, don't do it.
I was going to say, I'm sure, yeah.
There is not one person who said, this is a great idea, well done, go ahead and do this. Like, it was unanimous, you should not be doing this. This is a waste of money, a waste of time, waste of your energy, waste of your skill. Go and sit on a beach, enjoy yourself, relax. I said, I've enjoyed myself, and I've been to 83 countries. There's nowhere I want
to
see.
No way.
There's nothing I want to do. I mean, there are a few things I want to do, but I'll get to them.
Yeah.
I'm 55 years old. I want to do something which is special that I can create a real legacy for someone in some place, and that's why I'm doing it.
I see. Okay, good. So I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you how important, I'll ask you it now, I was going to do it later, but yeah, how important is legacy and being like, do you see yourself as a custodian of this club, this community?
I'm just a guardian of it until, the next person comes along with more money.
Yeah.
I haven't got deep enough pockets to succeed in football. If you look at 10 years ago, I could have bought a championship club, right?
Yeah.
5 years ago, I probably could have easily bought a League One or League Two club for the same investment, right? Then, obviously, you've had Luton. I think Salford were the first one, so all the class of 92.
Yes, that's right.
They've got a lot of money from Asia, and they keep pumping it in and having a go, and then have another go, and they were the original. They were the original, celebrity football club owners.
Yeah, and that's what four of them is it? It's like Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes, is it?
Beckham and
Neville,
both,
isn't it?
Nevilles,
both Nevilles. Okay, yeah.
Wrexham have definitely changed the landscape in terms of popularity.
Yeah.
But also in terms of wage bills. The wage bills now are a double or treble of what they were a couple of years ago.
Are they?
We played Torquay United on Wednesday night. Torquay United were a league team.
Yeah, I was going to say, it used to be.
Next week we got Yeovil. They were a championship team. So, they've seen the demise. So we're playing in front of 5,000 or 6,000 people. And we go there.
Wow.
So they're still very big clubs
with
big infrastructure and
So
it's not people playing in the park and sometimes people think, what have you bought? Have you just bought a couple of playing fields?
Yeah.
But going back to the whole people thing about what I find that extraordinary about football, and this is the thing that people kept saying, is it's very toxic. It's a toxic environment.
And is this people, Simon, when you said you met a lot of people who'd been owners and stuff, were they warning you off as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Not just your family.
And players, right. Ex-players. I've been involved in sport for a long time, so I know a lot of people who coach sports.
Mm.
One of my best friends was a sports psychologist to the England team. And it's like, okay. And maybe that's just my stubbornness and that determination that I'm gonna change something. Because, I'm coming in, trying to do it differently. Take that word out. I'm doing it differently. And I'm getting resistance. I'm getting resistance from the players. I'm getting resistance from the management team. I'm getting resistance from the fans. Mm. You can't do it like this. You can't do social media. You can't, you know. They should be training. I mean, they obviously think they should be training 20 hours a day because, you know, if they do anything else, they're not training hard enough.
Yeah, I could imagine. But recovery, as my previous conversation today, is everything.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to build this rehab. I haven't got enough electricity because National Grid are a dinosaur operator. So I've done deals where I'm taking the players personally. I mean, there's no other chairman, not even in any league, who are taking their players to the latest technology and saying, sit on there, it'll help you recover, it'll help you get better. Yeah. Go and have cryo here. Go and have...
I saw that in your socials. Compressions. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like... I phoned him yesterday. We played Wednesday night. I said, why are you not in? Oh, I'm going tomorrow. I said, but why aren't you there today as well? You know, they're silly. You know, they've got access to things which will help them repair and recover, and they're not taking advantage.
Yeah. How do you get past that?
I didn't think I'd have to nag, but I've got to nag, and I've got to keep just voice noting them and saying, come on. It's there.
What was the reaction of, like, your close family?
Boys are supportive. My wife is. She came round to it. You know, she saw it and she's excited. And my dad says, comes to games and watches the list. There's more money down the drain. And I said, that's very supportive of you. Are you enjoying watching your money go down the drain? I bet. Following the plan.
And what is the tell us what is the size of the opportunity there, like what kind of catchment has Eastbourne got, how historical is the club, how old is the club down there?
The club's not so old. It started in 65.
Okay.
About seven or eight guys decided to start a football club, and I mean, it's an amazing story of what they achieved from a, you know, literally from a local team, you know, building up through the county leagues, taking over what was basically floodplain, and building their own ground with their own hands, you know, literally brick by brick. And, you know, the turnstiles we have are the old Millwall turnstiles.
Really? They went recycled.
Yeah. I mean, what happens with a lot of clubs, and even Wembley, they sell off all their stuff and the lower league clubs sort of buy it up. And, so they, you know, and nothing works. You know, you flick a light switch and the wires sort of go halfway around Eastbourne before they come back. It's why is there a delay when you flick the switch for the light to come on? You know, normally you flick a switch and the light comes on like this. I don't know, it goes downstairs, goes up and down the stairs a few times, and then...
Oh, man.
So it was... But it's a fantastic story, and only last month the original founder died, and...
Okay.
I got a chance to go and see him before he passed, and he had a stroke, so he didn't even speak, but there was like a tear in his eye when he met me, and I just said to him, I'm gonna finish off your story, because he started the story, and that's what I'm saying. I'm just a guardian to fulfil somebody's dream.
And, you know, coming from a background in business, what are you modelling when it comes to this? Are you starting from scratch? Obviously, you've got different structures where you've got. Like, you know, Glazers at Manchester United, which we won't talk about that maybe, or you've got the likes of Manchester City and Newcastle, and then you've got, as you referenced, Wrexham with Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney there. What kind of modelling do you do for something like this?
Right now, it's Simon Leslie, the Simon Leslie show, and it can't, you know, Simon Leslie can't sustain that. So I'm exploring what I can do and who I can get involved with me.
Okay.
I think the ambition is huge, and it needs significant investment. So I'm starting to model that. I'm working with architects to design of what we want the future site to look like.
Okay.
And it's exciting, you know, when someone sends you some plans and you go, flip it, heck, that's, you know, it's like they've taken something out of here, which I had an idea which is that big, and they've made it look like bloody centre parks. I said the planners will have fun with that, but you know, I've got to find somebody either in Eastbourne with, you know, who wants to create a legacy in Eastbourne, or I've got to find bankers or investors who want to be part of something which is special. And it's exciting because I don't think it'll be. I don't think there's any lack of appetite, and I think it's such a good. It will be a good news piece. There will be so much good stuff coming out of this project.
Yeah.
You know, when I arrived, and you look at some of these players, and they're managed by people who don't care about them. You know, some bloke who drives a banged up Mercedes with a fake Rolex and flash trainers, and you think to yourself, okay, but the decisions you're making are not good for your client.
Mm.
And that can't be
not
good.
Bothered. Yeah.
That can't be good for the game. So that's the start of the game. You know, actually, let's go back a step. 8 years old to say 20 in an academy. You know, there's only one business that can have a 98.8% failure rate and still make billions of pounds, right? And that's Google.
Yeah.
And you say to yourself, is that all right now? I mean, if I ran a media business where we had to have a success rate for clients, those who didn't come back, Google has a 98.8% failure rate. It's only 1.2% of campaigns or of a campaign. That's a good return, right?
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So it's a 98.8% failure rate. The academies is about the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've got all these kids in academies, and the problem with academies today is there's not enough players. So they're keeping players who are not good enough for longer than they should do, because they should be getting them out earlier.
Okay.
They know they've got no hope, but they're still keeping them in there because there's a lack of numbers.
Mm.
So I'm trying, I can't stop saying that word, I'm looking at players who are coming out of academies, who've been let down by football, who maybe left at 15, 16, who are really good players, but, you know, people develop at different stages.
Yeah.
And that's my model. It's like I want to try and help them get back into football, help them become professional footballers.
I like that. Yeah. I saw a friend of mine from Cardiff came down with his son end of this season, and he's the goalie for Cardiff City under 16s, I think. Because my daughter's 16, the same age. And, you know, I was having that conversation with him at the side of the pitch going, so, you know, what are the chances of any of these lads, these 11 players here, actually going on and actually going into, you know, the professional ranks at Cardiff? Because he signed his, like, you know, first professional form, and of course him as a what he was then, 13, 14 year old, you're probably thinking global stardom, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi type thing. But the reality, as you say, it's 1.something% chance of actually making it.
That's just to get through the camp. That's just to get into a team.
Just to get into a team, yeah.
Right. Then you've got to, you know, so you're in the 20, you might be in the 25, right? But
then
you actually get on the bench. I mean, it's only Arsenal plays with two goalkeepers, right?
Yeah.
So you've got very little chance. And, you know, even today, with the amount of money that players are making in the top two leagues, still most of them are going bankrupt through either poor investments or poor decision making or gambling or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think the work that I'm doing with the players, you know, it's not just on the pitch. It's okay, let me set you up for life. Let me help you with whatever you want to do as a business. Mm. I've offered to write business plans for them and sit down with them and just strategize with them on what they want to do post football.
Yeah.
One of the kids said to me, I want to get a contract with Boohoo. And I think still one of my proudest moments, him sending me a picture of this massive Boohoo hole arriving at his house. So I will do whatever they want to do. I will help them do it. I'm just in the process of doing all their brand books so they understand who they are, because at the minute it's, you know, I'm Dave, I'm a right back, and I'm a footballer.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's remove that first sentence. So you're Dave. What do you like?
Yeah.
Not much. You know, it's hard. So sitting there with a writer, isn't it?
It's a mindset shift for them.
Who are you when you're not playing football? Because if you don't have an identity, this is why people fail when they come out of football, is that they haven't worked out who they are and what they stand for.
Yeah, yeah.
Their identity is football. My identity was ink for such a long time, so it took me a long time to realise that that wasn't who I was. And that only came from helping other young entrepreneurs, to saying, look, if you want to buy, sell, build, whatever you want to do, you cannot just be associated with the company that you start or what you do, because otherwise, when you lose that identity, you get depressed.
Yeah.
You know, I've not suffered one day of leaving a company I was in for 28 years and feeling sad about it, right? Because I did a lot of work in that lead up to going, this is not who I am.
Yeah. You know,
what I am and what I built is what I'm bringing into football, but it's not the brand above the door.
No, and I don't think, I'm a great believer in that you shouldn't be defined by, I'm Pete the Bricky, or I'm, Rog the Dodge or whatever. You know, don't think you should be defined by that. It's interesting, like you're saying with, people finishing their careers, and chat to Alex Good, who's fullback for Saracens, most successful club in English Premiership rugby. And very quickly into the interview, I just asked him a question like, you're 35 now, what are your plans next? And we literally, the whole interview went down that route that I don't know what I want to do next. I'm seeing a psychologist because it really worries me. And I'm like, but what do you and the other players talk about? We don't talk about it. And I was like, but surely a club of Saracen size, you're being pushed into directions of you can do this, you can do this, we can educate you, but that, no. And that, I was absolutely gobsmacked with that. I thought a club like Sarri's, everything would be taken care of through, again, connections with people through the club, that they would go, you want to go and have a conversation with John, you want to have a conversation with Peter.
It's crazy. It's happening, and it happens at the biggest clubs. See, what happens at the very big clubs is they do everything for them.
Yeah.
There are players who are coming out of Man City who cannot fill a form in. Because for the last 15 years, their forms have been filled in, their bottom's been wiped for them. I've got a player in a house who keeps telling me there's no electricity. All he's got to do is, he went to the post office and put it on the card, but he didn't realise he actually put the card into the machine. He said, I've put the money, it's still not working.
Oh, God.
It gets worse,
that's
right?
That's what you're up against.
We put a brand new washing machine in there. The washing machine doesn't work. Okay. What's wrong with it? I don't know. Don't work. After about a week, I sent some around. He says, you've got to switch it on.
Oh, my God.
And this is, these aren't 60, 70-year-old boys.
No.
These are 25-year-old men who are still unable to do the basics.
That's shocking,
isn't it? Because it, and it's really hard. I'm actually dealing with a player at the minute who tell me he feels depressed, doesn't like what's going on, doesn't like losing, doesn't like being here, doesn't like everything, right. Anything about what we're doing. And I'm like, there is no club on the planet that will be doing what we're doing here right now to try and help you and support you. Yet, I'm not even getting through to you. I'm not even scratching the surface. You're just putting up these barriers and going,
yeah,
I think I made a mistake. Okay. So let's break that down. Let's unpack it. Let's work out how we can help you. I don't know if you can help me. And I find that so sad, so sad. I had my first failure yesterday. So, we signed all these players and yesterday the first one left. I want to take the responsibility for anything that goes wrong at this club. He didn't play enough. His dad absolutely tore me a new backside at one of the games that his son was wasting away on the bench. And I said, look, I sympathise. I have my own sons who I want to do well, and they're sitting on the bench too. So I said, but you can't behave that way because, you're part of the problem. So going back to what the problem is, the problem is the agents, the problem is the parents, the problem is the manager.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get in the team. And then it starts. Manager don't like me.
Yeah.
So some players react one way. They go, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to prove
him. I'm
going to show him.
Yeah.
And the other ones go, and they sulk.
Yeah.
And he took the sulk. Right. He's an international player. He's playing for a European country. He's a great player, but he lost it. He lost his mind went, and we managed to sell him yesterday, and I texted him, and he said, look, I really love my time. I really love what I did with you. I didn't enjoy the football, but I really enjoyed it because we took him to the Vale in Cardiff.
Oh, did you? Ah,
and we had a whole
facility.
Boot camp there. Yeah, which was, you know, and that doesn't happen at National League.
No.
And so he got to do stuff and listen to people. He met Tim Grover. A few of the other coaches came in and worked with him.
I saw that.
And he said, you know what? I really love my time. And I said to him, look, you're my very first fail in football. And I said, but I'm watching and I'm cheering for you. And I, you know, when you're playing at Wembley, I will come and watch you. And, you know, I wish you nothing but the best. And that was the way it always worked, always did for me. Even people left me and called me all the names of the sun. I said, look, I'm still going to cheer for you.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great attitude to have. And how important has it been for, like, the rise of football documentaries? Is probably now, you know, not anybody in the UK at least, and I know it's been huge in America and sparked growth there, of a documentary like the Wrexham one, but equally you've got the Newcastle United one that's just come on the screen as well, and just getting, you know, behind the scenes and showing people a bit more reality like you're talking, and clearly we don't see that side of it at the moment, but given your backgrounds in media, have you thoughts on how you can kind of shine a light on that?
Well, we might have cameras at the club quite often. Uh-huh. I mean, they're filming every day for the social media stuff.
Yeah.
And anything that's momentous, we're capturing on camera. Had a camera following me around during the early negotiations, which was quite funny.
Yeah.
I want to tell a story.
Yeah.
And you know, this script right now is such a great story, and I've talked to quite a few of the big networks, and even my friends at Reach, which was my
own
network.
Yes, that's Reach TV, yeah.
We're going to do something with them and broadcast something in the States.
Okay.
I think it's important to tell the story, and, you know, because this one is quite different to the others, you know, Wrexham wasn't about the people. You know, the bloke in the pub, and but it wasn't about the players, and it wasn't.
No.
They were still firing people and still getting rid of people and still treating them like footballers get treated.
Yeah,
you know, it was about, you know, they had more money than everybody else.
Yeah,
I love Mission to Burnley. I don't know if you watched that one.
I haven't seen that one. No. Okay.
So the reason it's called Mission to Burnley, it's four Mormon friends who've gone in and bought Burnley, and it was only about five or six episodes, but it was just from when company came in and people trying to get company, and
it was really
well done and really well documented, and I don't know if you've ever seen as well Bunch of Amateurs.
No.
Which is the story of Dorky and Wanderers.
I haven't heard of that one.
Actually, the guy who was in there, he's internet famous now. I mean, they get hundreds of thousands of views on their docu, their Fly on the Wall. But it's about the manager. It's not really about
okay.
So he was at the game on Wednesday night, and I sat and had a coffee with him, and he just said to me, he said, you've really upscaled the football club, you know, since I was last in. Now it feels like a league club. And I said, yeah. He goes, you haven't done it on the pitch, though, have you? And I said, one thing at a time.
Yeah, but you've got to start with infrastructure, haven't you, and that building that pyramid, and you mentioned, like, you know, recruitment, and you see somebody like a Nottingham Forest literally buy two new sets of teams every year, you know, and difficult that must be to integrate, not just into the playing style, but the culture.
You know, they talk about players not gelling, and I go, really? You know, these guys are spending most of every day with each other, but they don't all like each other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, you might not see it on the pitch, but, you know, some of them actually find each other quite distasteful.
Yeah, but
I know that that's been hard. And then when you have that many injuries to bring in, we had to bring in another six players.
How many to bring in, really? Wow, okay.
There was one weekend we could just about get a team going.
Really, yeah.
And there isn't, you know, people say, just get more players. Well, who's going to pay for all these players? Where's that money coming from? And, you know, that's the biggest challenge, is that they just think, you flick your fingers, and not only who's going to pay for them, where are you going to find them? Because everyone's in the same boat at the minute.
Yeah, you're all looking for the
for the players as well.
But I think the thing, and this is where I think recruitment is so important, and I've just taken on... So the manager I hired was the A-teams manager at Brighton.
Okay.
So Evan Ferguson, Solly March.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben White, you know, he was managing all... So he knows how to develop young talent.
Yeah.
So that was the reason that I took him on. He's never managed before, so it was a gamble.
Yeah.
But he was good at developing young people. And last week I took on a guy called Mark Anderson, who's... he was the scout for Brighton, so he brought Evan Ferguson over and Ben White. And he then went to Man United and he left football again. Like, everybody involved in this group left football because they were CEO. They were just like, can't do this anymore. This is not a nice place. But they really have bought into what we're doing and they're excited about it and they want to get involved again. And they can see that everything I'm doing... Everything I set out, Steve Coppell was involved as well. I set out to do, I'm sticking to.
Yeah.
He said, and this is a really weird thing what I'm about to say. Simon, most people would have sat the manager by now. Most people would have given up on what they're doing right now and just gone back to the old fashioned way because you really are resilient. And I think you used that word at the beginning to just be so committed to what you're doing. I said, every time we sack somebody or get rid of somebody, it's a failure on our part to our mission.
Yeah, yeah, no, agreed. And I know you're not where you want to be as a football club. What about Simon Leslie personally?
Good news. I have to ask him. We talk about ourselves in the third person.
Yeah, exactly.
People keep asking me this, are you still excited?
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me at the beginning, I got super excited. I am still excited because I can see, despite the script writers, I wish they went on strike with him, but
with the
Hollywood ones. despite everything that's going on, I can still see us really achieving what we need to achieve and surprising people and being this sort of beacon for good in football.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine is Drew Broughton, and Drew, I think he calls himself the Fear Coach on Instagram, and he says football is full of broken souls, and you know, I admire what you're trying to do, but I don't think it's possible. So I have him in my ear as well. It's you know, everybody needs to find themselves, not just me. You know, I've got to be. I keep getting this thing going, it's tough, isn't it? It's tough. Mm. And I go, well, I've got to be tougher. And I think some days I need to go in the sea and just recalibrate again, and I really find that helpful.
Yeah, 100%.
Yesterday I actually went and had a cryotherapy in the morning, first thing I did. And actually the sea was so beautiful because it's been so rough the last couple of weeks.
It has, it's been churning, yeah.
I've not been to go in, but yesterday it was beautiful. I thought, I don't need to go to the cryotherapy. But just doing that and sort of recalibrating and having a coffee and just sitting down and writing and just taking care of yourself. And I don't think people do take enough care of themselves.
No, and I was having that conversation recently. I think, you know, you end up, you know, in the weeds of it all, and you don't zoom out. And I think, you know, clearly smartphones don't help us because you're literally zooming in as well. But taking time to actually take that step back to gather your thoughts, kind of, you know, decompress, you know, come again. I'm a huge believer in that. And it's like kind of like this time of year now, isn't it? End of November, beginning of December. This feels like there's this mad rush to the end of the year. And it's like, it doesn't always have to be like that. You can just breathe.
It's weird because, you know, coming back into London, I noticed the roads are quieter yesterday, and I was like, where is everybody? And then this morning it's chaos
it's
again.
It's chaos again, yeah.
But you've got to look after yourself and make sure that you're allowing enough time for yourself.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, we are the Mercedes logo, right? So it's split into three. There's your business, there's your family, and there's you. And if you're not you know, they're all equal measures, right? So you need to make sure that you're giving yourself enough time on your own calendar.
Yeah.
And the minute that any one of those sort of sways, you're out of balance. And
yeah. Very, very true. And I, when I first started out, when I left Virgin Atlantic like 12, 13 years ago, I was constantly like getting ill. And then it was like actually having that realization that if you can't look after yourself, you can't look after your clients, you can't look after your staff, you're no good to bloody anybody.
Yeah.
So take the time to do it. You know, I think that's a key message.
I think it's a lovely message to end on. I think we all have a job to do, which is to look after ourselves, look after the people that we that we're responsible for. And if we do that and we give them the best we possibly can, and it's not always right, everybody will end up in a much nicer place and it will be a nicer world.
Agreed. Last question. You know, you've clearly been very successful in life. You've taken on a hell of a challenge, which is great, again, to be able to do that. What's the one thing that you've needed to get you to where you are now? And that can be somebody else, it can be a quality, it could be a piece of advice.
I was thinking about what successful footballer looked like. And you can be a successful footballer, but you don't necessarily be a successful person. And you can't be a great dad, and you can't be a great husband.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the best bit of quality, the best bit of advice I can give anybody is be aware of your feet are. So if they're in a pair of football boots, play as well as you can.
Yeah.
If they're in slippers and you're sat at home with everybody else, be present, be available, be aware. And give whoever you're with, you know, your undivided attention. Don't let the phone take over. And by the way, I've no way mastered that yet, and I'm doing my best to master it. But that is the best bit of advice I can give anybody is do the best you can. And I'll never forget, I was reading a story with a phone in my hand and my son went, "Those aren't the words of the story, Dad." And I went, that was a killer. You know, I was responding to an email while reading a story, and you just went, "Something's wrong with this."
I remember doing that as well, and I remember catching myself up, like when my kids were younger, and I just remember thinking, like, "No, you're either doing that, or you're here reading a story to them. Don't combine the two." And again, it was just checking emails and WhatsApp messages for work, and you just thought, "Just don't do it. Just don't do it. Don't ruin the moment."
Do you want a really nice story on that?
Yes, let's end on that.
So, I was driving home from work once, and As sort of stopped at lights, this guy tapped on the bonnet and he went, Simon, it's Daddy. We went to school together. And I went, okay. I wasn't very fond of people I went to school with anyway. And he said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Oh, I don't live far from you. Can I have a lift?" I said, "Of course you can." And he got in the car. And basically the whole way he's sitting there moaning about life and complaining. And he was really miserable.
Yeah.
So we pulled up at his drive, and as he's walked up to his drive, there's like this little bush by the side of his entrance, and he sort of strokes the leaves of the bush, puts the key in the door, and opens the door. He goes, "You know, come inside, meet my wife, and you know, come and have a cup of tea." And I said, "All right then." The door opens. "Oh, what happened to old Grumpy Nuts in the car? He was charming, he was lovely, he was loving Dad, and he's cuddling the kids." And I'm like, I don't even recognise you.
Yeah.
So we had the tea, and I said, "Look, I'm gonna get an Uber. I'm gonna go home." He goes, I'll drive you. I'll come with you. We're only around the corner." So as we got in the car, and I'm just driving away, he said, "What was that all about?" He goes, "What?" I said, "Well, all the way home, all you could do was complain about your boss and how hard life was and how difficult it was. And then you go in and you turn into Super Dad." He said, "Yeah." He says, "You see that tree by the side of my door?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, that's my worry tree." I said, "And?" Yeah, he goes, "Well, every night I go down there and I leave my worries on there. Because the people behind that door don't need to see the worries. Mm. They don't really need to see what's happened to me. They just need to see a good dad. And do you know what, Simon? The funny thing is, most mornings when I go to pick them up, most of them aren't even there." And I just think that is that is the story of life, is that we worry about so much. Yeah. Most of them
not important.
Won't even come true.
No.
And if we focus on the most important things, life's good.
That's a great story. I want a worry tree. Maybe we should sell worry trees to everybody. There's an opportunity here.
Get your worry tree here.
Simon Leslie, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for watching this episode of Screw It, Just Do It. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments below this video. Has this episode helped move you closer to where you want to be? All that I ask is that if you enjoyed this episode and that it's moved you closer to getting to where you want to be, that you share this episode so that it helps one other person do just the same. Just ask yourself what small action will move you forward to get you from where you are, then screw it and just do it. Until next time.